We're going to go ahead and get started since all of you are here, maybe a few minutes early. But in the interest of time, I'm going to cut down on the introduction of our speakers. If you want to see their full bio, it's out on the EDUCAUSE website. Dee Childs is the deputy CIO at Louisiana State University and has been involved in this particular space as well as many others in her career. Michael Karkuska is the executive director of Sakai, and prior to that assignment, Michael has been involved in teaching and learning in many different capacities elsewhere. Dave Schwartz is the CIO at American University in Washington, D.C., previously the CIO at
George Washington.
George Washington, and also worked at West Virginia. So what we're going to do here is the speakers have five main topics that they'd like to introduce and have broken it up among themselves. Each of them is going to do about 7 minutes on each topic. We hope to have maybe 10 or 12 minutes left at the end to take questions from this room, as well as from the online audience that are going to be submitting questions. So my job is just to try to keep them on time in their sections, and then we'll take questions from there forward. And okay. I think, Michael, you're going to lead off.
First slide. Okay. All right. Let's get started. And we're actually going to be splitting up the 7 minutes among ourselves, but we each get an opportunity to kick things off. So I know there are many people here today that are being hit by the economic times and the budget crunch, and many people are looking to open source to kind of help balance the budget and reduce their costs. So you can see the first slide that we have up there. Is open source really the way to get some relief? Is it free? And if so, is it more like free beer or free puppies? And I've got 8 puppies in my house right now. I can tell you, there's a lot of work behind puppies. So I thought maybe we'd first go to Dee, because Dee has gone through a conversion, a major conversion. And I thought maybe you'd give us some feedback on what are the costs of moving to open source.
Be happy to. So let me preface my remarks by saying when we did an analysis of converting our course management system from both a vended solution and a homegrown system, which we were running simultaneously, and we converted to Moodle, cost actually was not our first consideration. It was much more about impact on teaching and learning. It was about faculty satisfaction. It was about student satisfaction. It was about feature set. And cost certainly was a consideration, but it wasn't the only one. All that being said, when we looked at the vast number of items that were under consideration, cost is going to be one of those considerations. And since we liked the open source selection that we made, it turns out that we decided to not reduce our overall financial footprint. That was a decision we made fairly early on in order to transition the resources, the financial resources that we were currently spending on our vended solution and on software maintenance and on hosting into what we call humanware, so human capital. So we made that as a very strategic choice, and 2 years later, I think we made absolutely the right decision for a variety of reasons. Some of those decisions I'm going to get into later on when we talk about support, so you can kind of hang on to that as an idea for now. But just to give you an idea, when we transitioned those costs over, we were able to hire 2 developers and 4 instructional technologists whose jobs are not only to support Moodle, but they're able to support the faculty in a variety of ways. So for us, the cost-benefit ratio was wonderful, and I'm very pleased that we made that decision.
And I think that resonates with the experience of lots of the folks in the Sakai community. While, you know, in the long run, you can look at changing from a proprietary license cost system to a free and open source system as a long-term cost savings. In the short term, any transition is going to cost more during a brief period of time. But I would say that most of the Sakai institutions have cost has been an important but secondary factor, and that they've chosen to invest any cost savings back into just the kind of things that you were talking about. And so, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier today at breakfast about a framework for this, for the kind of decision about Blackboard, Sakai, or Moodle, or whatever other system might be out there, really needs to start from the perspective of campus strategy and where teaching and learning and research collaboration and portfolios and these things might fit into your long-term campus strategy and what your overall IT infrastructure strategies are. And cost is certainly, the costs certainly need to add up at the end of the day, one way or the other. But I think those strategic factors are much more critical than the potential cost savings that you might seek to find.
Now, in terms of cost, do you have at your university a diversity of solutions, or have you standardized on Moodle?
We standardize on Moodle, and going back to the cost analysis and the kind of information that you might want to take home with you if you're considering such a solution is if I were going to compromise, if I were actually trying to reduce my financial footprint, I wouldn't compromise on the instructional technology kind of support. That's really direct support to faculty, and the gains in that are enormous. And what I would think about compromising on are the customization. So we did decide to hire developers. We do a lot of in-house customization. We try not to tamper with the Moodle core, but we've we have enormous amount of satisfaction with the development work that we have done in-house. But if I were going to compromise in any sort of way, I think it would be just take Moodle, install it as a package, and try not to customize it very much or not invest your personnel resources in doing that.
Exactly, because I think programmers are expensive. And if you have to add a few more programmers, any savings that you might see are shot. So you really have to have more of a strategic perspective. Good.
One of the things I wanted to mention is the free slide, which we have free beer, which you can enjoy in moderation without long-term effects, and free puppies, which obviously have long-term costs, care and feeding, that may be substantial. But there's free as in freedom as well, which I think is an important part of the open source proposition. No restrictions on what you can do with the software. You can add anybody to your system. You can change it in any way you want to. You aren't bound by that, potentially restrictions on a license agreement in terms of what you can do to it. So I think there's another resonance of the word free there that's, I think Sakai and Moodle schools, at least Sakai schools, find to be a big reason why they have chosen an open source solution.
Good.
Do you want to transition topics?
Yeah.
Great.
So, who are you going to call? I've already mentioned what we did at LSU about transitioning some of our expenditures into more support, but let me talk in quite a bit more detail about that support. As everybody knows, but I'll just say it because it needs to be said, change is expensive. And one of the biggest things that you need to plan for in terms of support is that transitional period, and that's going to be basically a spike in whatever human effort that you need to put into the situation, both in terms of the back office and in terms of the end user support. So let me also distinguish support in a couple of different ways, because I think it's important to distinguish that kind of support. I think when people think about a vended solution versus an open source solution, one of the things that they should get, is help with back office. They get help with installation, with integration, with security, with code fixes. So you have to pay for that support. It's generally not free. It's generally not thrown in, but there's a certain confidence level and satisfaction that you get in working with a vendor, and the expectation is high that you will be able to bridge that transition period fairly successfully because you have purchased a solution. So I think that's one of the issues that you have to pay attention to with open source. All that being said, when we're talking about Moodle in particular, there are 45,000 registered sites. There are probably many more sites that are unregistered. There are 30 million users worldwide. So there's definitely a critical mass of support both for the back office and for the front office. So I've already talked also about that we transition some of our financial investment into human capital, and that was particularly wise approach in that transition period. So I will not kid you about if you were anticipating transferring content from one course management system to another, and that's regardless of whether it's a vended solution or open source. That's an arduous, expensive, difficult, potentially difficult process. So all that investment that we made in the human capital in terms of support really paid off right up front because we were able to rapidly transition. And one of the things that I like to say is my boss, who I love dearly, said, well, we're not going to run these systems in parallel. We're just going to flip the switch, he says. And I'm like, okay, the only thing I can think of to flip right now is something we don't want to talk about. But he was very wise. We did that. Had we not made that investment in the human support in order to do that transition, we would have had some very unhappy faculty. So it is very wise for you all to think about what the support of both of those, any kind of environment you're going to be investing in.
Right. Well, in terms of the maturity of Blackboard support, I've been a customer of Blackboard for a number of years, and I've watched them mature over time in terms of their back office support. And I think in terms of the hosting, they have 6 data centers scattered across the world, and they have them connected together in a mesh. So they have a very reliable and deeply supported solution. And one of the things I, as exploring the open source is what options are there for support? I know you use Moodle Rooms, and I know there are a number of options out there. How deep do the support goes? How many centers do they have? Do you have an idea of the extensiveness of the support?
You know, there's a variety of different ways to go about doing this, from hosting to customer service and help desk type help. And I think, you know, Moodle has, I don't know, probably 50 partners around the world that can provide services. Sakai has just over a dozen commercial affiliates that can provide services around the world. And I think, you know, when I observe what the quality levels have been, I'm not going to pick on Blackboard, but in large proprietary enterprise software vendors across the higher ed landscape in terms of support, I don't know that that's been a really level of support to aspire to, and I think, you know, we hope to do better. And one of the promises of open source, and I'm not going to say that we've reached it, is the decoupling of the support from the license ought to put pressure on the support providers to deliver value for dollar on that area. And that decoupling, I think, is a strong argument for the long-term quality of support for open source solutions. If in our world, RSmart or Unicon or Longsite or Moodle Rooms or Remote Learner, if they don't deliver on that, you pick up the software, you go somewhere else and get your support there. So I think that's a compelling long-term driver.
Very good. I know at Blackboard, I think they're restructuring along product lines to try to improve their support. And I think from the development side to the support side to the marketing side, they're working to integrate that to improve and address some of the issues that you just mentioned.
Well, it's certainly been, you know, I think nice to see Ray Henderson, who I think is well respected in the industry and has delivered quality support, you know, seeming to play a strong role there. So that's certainly promising.
Yes, I think that is exciting.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I would add is that, and this has something to do with expectation management, which is somewhat tangential to the support issue and tangential to a lot of things that we will be talking about today. But I just think you need to have your awareness antennas tuned real well on your campus. And even though we're very happy with our open source solution, there is a different set of expectations that the campus has with regard to open source versus vended, and it may be subtle and it may be not particularly articulated, but we have found that there are some subtle differences on campus. So again, that's why we've chosen.
As far as tailoring it to specific campuses.
Can you give an example of that, Dee?
Well, I think there's just a little bit of wariness. And I'll give you a completely different example, but I still think it serves to illustrate what we're talking about, and that is we also outsourced our student email. We actually outsourced student email years and years ago, and then we recently converted to Gmail, and that's a whole other topic that many of you might be interested in. If you recall, a pretty big Gmail outage during the fall semester,
and
it hit our campus the first week of classes. And we were very concerned that this was going to be a black mark on the notion of, you know, cloud-based, sort of the innovative things that we want to be doing on the campus. Frankly, there was a collective yawn that went up from the campus. Meanwhile, students were irritated that Facebook was having an outage right at the same time. But we also, so the next day we're reading the student newspaper, and in the student newspaper, the thing that showed up the most was that the reporter said, well, basically it's Google, and if they can't keep things running, then
who can?
We've all sort of just stood there in amazement and thought, this is really weird, but it's just to illustrate, there are different sets of expectations that people have about vended versus proprietary.
And I think you alluded to it too just a second ago, David. It was something I hear from Sakai folks, you know, now and again, which is a faculty expectation that now that we have an open source solution, we can make it do whatever we want to and will tomorrow. You know, clearly expectation management is an important part of anything. Again, keeping people happy.
And as you mentioned earlier, you have to be careful about getting out on a fork and customizing the base code, because then you really expose yourself from not being able to move forward with the updates that may come. That's good.
One thing we didn't mention was community support, which comes from all of us, but I think we should move on and maybe come back to that if people are interested. So I think the idea here is, as risk isn't, you know, there's a myth about open source is more risky. I think the success of Moodle and the success of Sakai, the success of Linux and a variety of other things have proven that that's not necessarily the case. And for us, and what we were discussing this morning, it's a question of what kind of risks do you want to manage? What kind of risks are you prepared to manage and have the skill to manage on your particular campus?
Sure.
There's risks on the proprietary side of vendor lock-in, end of life of products, not understanding what the escape route is from any of these solutions. And so in terms of evaluating the risks of open source versus proprietary, can you talk a little bit about maybe how LSU looks at those issues and Dave maybe about American?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I'll dive right into that. I would have to say that when we were initially evaluating our future direction, we probably didn't give as much attention to the issues of risk that we should have. And as Michael has said, there are a number of different facets to that. So one of the things he didn't necessarily mention is that of security. We certainly involved our security officer right up front, and I would encourage anybody to do that and to really try to get a handle on for any product that you're bringing into your environment, how that's going to interplay with your local security policies and as well as what kind of risk you're exposing yourself to. But I think the lesson learned since our implementation is that, again, regardless of what you're doing, you need to have an escape or exit strategy. And so even though we're very happy with the environment and the solution that we have in place, we've already begun to think about what if we need to make a change? And I guess a corollary to that is just constantly thinking about, you know, what's the life cycle of any particular shelf life of any particular product that you might be investing in? And, you know, how long do you need to wait before you start to investigate either on something else or recycling that particular technology?
Sure. But, you know, I think, Michael, you mentioned that open source has made some progress. I think it has, but not all open source is equal in terms of its maturity. I think Red Hat has come a long way with IBM's help in terms of Linux, and we've adopted Red Hat in our data center, and we feel that it meets our requirements in terms of maturity. But in terms of security, I think we've seen some problems with some of the open source, and I think there's been some progress. I think Sakai's made where you're doing code review, extensive code reviews now before launching it, but I think there's been some security issues with Moodle, and particularly on with the extensions and third-party development where there's not that kind of review that's occurring. So, you know, I think it's something that even in our own environment where we have developers working in PHP, we do code review, and we work with partners that do an assessment of the software, and if we find a vulnerability, we fix it rather than put it out there. And I think that's part of my concern about some of the open source is the maturity in terms of security. In terms of the issue of lock-in, I think there has been some concern with Blackboard, and I know there's commitment to open standards on IMS and the common cartridge. I know Ray, you mentioned Ray earlier, and I think he has made a commitment to open that up. In addition, I think Blackboard has opened up to provide access from their application into Moodle and Sakai data. And I think their commitment is to go the other way as well.
I'd love to see that.
I think there's
haven't heard that directly.
Yeah,
actually,
I've heard that. And so if that actually comes to play, I think that will reduce a lot of the risk that people perceive about being locked in. And so I think that's all very encouraging. In terms of other risks, I think there are some risks that I'm concerned about in terms of maturity. And as we move from upgrades, and I mentioned to you earlier at breakfast, I know Sakai is going to make a major upgrade from 2 to 3, and Moodle, I think, moving into the 2 space. And what's unclear to me is when you make a major upgrade, how do all those interfaces get supported? And particularly with all the third-party extensions and all the things that may happen, can we upgrade and have it forwardly compatible, or do we have to rewrite all that stuff? And I'm curious as to that, because that to me is a major risk as you look to an upgrade.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about this, I think, on the next slide, but I'm quite optimistic about that in terms of Sakai. Of course I would say that, but let me tell you why. The Sakai is mainly developed by the user community. Mm-hmm. So the universities that are using Sakai are the developers of Sakai. It's not the Sakai Foundation. I don't have a development staff that does work on that. These are the people who are responsible for doing the same people that are responsible for doing the upgrades. So if there is not compatibility and an easy transition from one system to the other, all of the pain of that falls on their very own shoulders. Mm-hmm. I think this is a very strong, again, systematic way to ensure that the right amount of attention is going to be paid to just those issues. Yeah. Now, we don't know exactly what that's going to look like for Sakai 3 yet, because we're not there at that point. Mm-hmm. We have people working on it already. Mm-hmm. But I think part of all these things is looking at what are the systemic pressures on these organizations, and what are those systemic pressures going to lead to down the road. This is one case where I think the kind of pressures on the Sakai community, at least, are going to lead to easy transitions between versions rather than complex ones.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
And I would echo that with Moodle. I'm probably not quite as close to the development of that product as you are to Sakai, but my sense of things is that interoperability is incredibly important. And if you think about it, if you just think about the roots of open source in general, what's the motive? I mean, what is the motive for anyone to contribute to or use open source? It's not a monetary motive. So really the only motive that really shines through is the value proposition for making something work, and in this mm-hmm. case, a teaching and learning product that's proven to be incredibly valuable. So I'm not suspicious of that motive. I'm happy with it and think that it leads to successful outcomes in terms of moving forward
sure.
in interoperability.
In terms of risks, what are the risks of the existing corporate structure? Are there risks? I mean, you know, people are concerned about Blackboard's corporation. Could they be bought out? Could they be taken mm-hmm. over? Not unlike PeopleSoft Oracle example.
Yeah.
And I think one of the nice things about Sakai is your open foundation. But my understanding is Moodle is a corporation, and maybe people don't understand what that may mean. Could it be taken over, not unlike MySQL was taken over recently by Oracle? Are there risks associated with that? And I think that's something that people need to be aware of, that I wasn't aware of until quite recently, that there are these differences that may add risk to the adoption of the software in the long run. So, Mike, did you want to?
Sakai can't be bought.
Right.
That and in a sense, you know, while Moodle HQ could be purchased, and the development team there go to work for Blackboard. That seems a strange future to imagine. You know, the code is GPL licensed, and you know they can't take the code with them. It that remains out in the community, and this is another pressure that I think is an interesting positive pressure on open source, which is, you know, if we transition from 2 to 3 and it's not and it's not successful for some reason, mm-hmm. nobody's telling Marist College or Indiana University they need to move to Sakai 3, and there's nobody who can shut it down on them either. Mm-hmm. So again, I think we've got to, and Blackboard has similar pressures. The customers don't need to go to the next version, but you know,
at some point, in most commercial software, you basically have to.
You have to, and yeah. So that's different in our ecology, mm-hmm. and I think that's a positive for us. How are we doing on time, Barry? Great. So an interesting topic here, which is roadmaps and innovation. And I'm just going to talk a little bit, introduce this a little bit in terms of how the communities get their work done. So where do new ideas come from? Who decides what gets into the product in the next release? Because if you're doing an evaluation right now, you can look at the feature list today, and you might like one better than the other today. But this is, as Dee referred to, a 5 to 10 year decision for your campus, not a snapshot in time. So you need to look at these things and understand how that's going to happen and understand which methodology you're most comfortable with, because it's not today's system, it's tomorrow's system that you care about. Moodle, again, is fairly tightly controlled by Moodle HQ. There's lots of contribution from around the world, but you know, Martin Dugiamis and his team in Moodle lay down the law about what gets in there, and that's worked really, really well. Sakai has a distributed model. I don't decide what goes into the Sakai release. There's a collaborative, sometimes painful collaborative community process for deciding how that happens. If anyone was at Brad Wheeler's talk this morning on collaboration, they'll recognize some of those themes. And Blackboard has a traditional product development process with feedback from customers, I'm sure a customer advisory council, product mm-hmm. managers, and things like this. These are very different ways to get the future defined. Now, Sakai, I love ours because I think what we're trying to do is eliminate or reduce the distance between the end user and the developer by having the develop happen on campus. Yeah. The cost we pay for that is a coordination cost across a multi-campus collaboration. Mm-hmm. And that's an attitude that some institutions coming to Sakai have said, that's what I want. I want to be part of that kind of a community that's doing things that way. Others have come and said, I don't know how they get anything done.
Yeah.
So there's I think, a bit of a distinction there.
Sure. And, you know, it seems to me that there's good in both. There's the best of both, which is in the community source model, you have a lot of innovation occurring and a lot of contributions, particularly addressing some of the one-offs, not the big core issues, not the big issues. And I think where Blackboard hasn't been strong is in developing those things that tailor to all the specific needs. However, I do know that they recognize that, and they've really begun to support their third-party developers and the community source through Ocelot. And so, for example, the initiative I know that's happening at Northwestern now to do the better integration with Google, I think there's a recognition that there's a lot of that could be offered to the Blackboard community by opening it up and learning from the community source model, and how do we get the best of both. And so I think there is an effort to figure out how to do that. And that, you know, we're excited about that because I think it just gives us a lot more opportunity to look at what's out there, to plug those things in. We're a Google Apps school, so better integration with Google, like Google Wave, Google Apps. I think that's all very something we're excited about.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line for us is choice is good.
Yep.
And having more choices is more good. That doesn't mean that you implement every single choice that's available, but it certainly gives you a palette of things to look at.
Yes.
And the other nice thing for us is that since we do have development in-house, we can choose those things that we develop in-house as opposed to, which are very customized to our environment and tend to result in a very high satisfaction level with our faculty and also with our students. We have a governance committee that guides the mm-hmm. development of Moodle. So we can also be out of phase with what the larger Moodle community is doing, if we wish to do that, and that simply gives us a lot more flexibility and a lot more choice.
How closely do you track Moodle plans at LSU?
I would say sort of in the middle. Mm-hmm. We just got back from Moodle Moot. I didn't personally go, but several of my staff went, and in fact, we were co-hosting that event. So that's one of the opportunities to learn about the new aspects and new features coming out in Moodle 2.0.
Sure.
And what about
Blackboard's just put out there the next generation preview, what they call the preview server, which allows us to go out there and then evaluate and then give feedback to the next generation of Blackboard. And I think that they did that under version 9, and I think in their future generation they're doing that. And that's something I think that we're excited about, because then we can see it, we can give them our feedback, and then kind of plan for where they're going down the road.
So it's not just PowerPoint presentations?
No, right. It's actually a working system. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and of course, as open source projects, you can always go see the latest code, and for better or worse, yes. See what it's doing.
Yes.
One of the things we talked about at breakfast this morning was the pace of innovation versus stability and quality and change on campus. And I thought that was a pretty interesting conversation.
Yes.
This product area, the CMS, the LMS, the VLE, depending on where you are in the world and what your perspective is, has reached a level of the products are, you can do most of the same things with all the products, and we're not going to go down a feature comparison here. But at some point, the users have fallen into a pattern of how they want to use this product and may not care as much about some of these other things.
Sure.
What's your perspective
on that?
Well,
I think Dee made the point earlier, expectations, meeting our user expectations. And I think while we're very excited about the Blackboard 9, we haven't implemented it in production because in our test we haven't found it to be stable. And so I think our feedback to Blackboard is, rather than continue to roll out things that are really on the cutting edge of innovation, we'd rather have something that's a little bit more reliable and that we can put out there and meet those needs. And I think there is a recognition that trade-off needs to be made as they move forward. Mm-hmm. And so we're excited about that shift. And I think, so at some point, I think we will implement the 9.1 version when we feel with the new patch set that's supposed to have come out just this week, hopefully we'll address it and help us make it, a little bit more reliable and stable.
But I would also agree, reliability and stability for your end users, which tend to be faculty and students, is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. And that sort of ties back into couple things I've mentioned before, which is having that governance structure, which gives us a lot of good feedback and guidance about the pace of innovation that we want to adopt and take
That's
on
right.
our campus.
That's right. You mentioned your mature change control process, but understanding that, because if we want to be able to deliver that, not just the 3.9s, but push that up to 3.5 to 4.9s, the more reliability, the better, because an outage of a few hours at the wrong time of the semester can be a catastrophe. And so trying to meet those expectations are a challenge. And that's why we when we look at software, that level of maturity and reliability is something that's critically important to us, as I'm sure it is to you.
And we went through something similar in the Sakai community 2 years ago where usage of Sakai at many institutions really just caught fire, and the load on the systems and usage doubled from the previous term. And a lot of the folks who were doing development work were all of a sudden troubleshooting issues.
Yeah.
And it became clear to us it wasn't an either or innovation versus reliability and quality, because when the resources doing the work are the innovation work are also the resources who may get called in at the end of the day to fix something if it's not working, then you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. So we really put an emphasis on quality a couple of years ago. And I think that's paid dividends in returning some of the resources back to the innovation side. So it is
a good
trade-off. I think that same dynamic's got to happen at Blackboard inside there
it does.
As well.
And I think that we're all grappling with that. Yeah. But pretty good. Well, do you want to go to the last topic?
And then questions.
We can open up to questions. And that is the future. The future is a very interesting one for us in this space. You know, there are some that have said that with the introduction of things like Wave and the cloud, that the existing traditional course management system is dead. I don't know if you've read that in recent blogs. It's very interesting. In addition, I think there is clearly a shift to provide more of a personal learning environment. Our students are demanding more support. And so we're trying to balance the demand from the faculty, now from the students, and guess what? Also from the administration. We talked about this now. As universities are moving much more toward outcomes and assessment in needs for certification, that we're getting pushed in that direction. And so I think when we look at the future, we see all these things colliding. How are we going to address those demands, and what's going to happen as a result? And so I'll throw that one out to you, and then we'll maybe get some feedback from the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had an extensive conversation over breakfast this morning, which was really fun. But I think my observation about this particular topic is that, yeah, there are collisions, and that both the blessing and the curse of being an IT administrator is that we kind of have to bridge the gap of different needs, and there's definitely a disconnect between, say, what a faculty member or what a student might want to get out of a learning management system or any innovative piece of software, and what the administrative needs are. And those run the gamut from financial to things like accreditation. We haven't been asked yet to use Moodle as to assist us in accreditation. I suspect we will get asked that question or get to assist in that. And so I think it's an incredibly fine balancing act that you have to do in IT to try and bridge all the different needs.
It is.
Yeah, and I you know, we don't know what the future is going to look like. I think some people will, you know, say the LMS is dead, and I think that's probably wrong in the short term. And who knows in the long term? I'm quite excited about a number of things I see in a variety of places, not just in the Sakai community, but in the Moodle community and in the Blackboard world, and Desire to Learn as well, and you know, I'm gonna tout an advantage for open source in here, and it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on this, Dave. Which is, we Sakai don't have a financial incentive to own large swaths of the enterprise infrastructure. In fact, we sort of have an incentive to give as much of it away as we can. It's less code for us to maintain. Whereas I think traditionally, the large proprietary enterprise software platform producers and their business models push towards owning more and more, so they can justify their fees and raise their fees and sell more.
Or if the public companies, you know, address the demands of their stockholders.
And in the short term, doing that in the short term, you know, in the long term. So
Well, I think there's pros and cons to that. I think that the Blackboard environment is spread very wide. Besides Learn, you have Connect,
Transact,
communications, Transact, more and more, and they keep expanding that. And then you also see now, even today, I think Datatel announced their entree into this intelligent learning management today, this morning, as a matter of fact. So we see that people coming from the ERP side now are beginning to do that integration back into the learning management side with their partnership with Moodle and Microsoft. So it's interesting that there's a recognition that there is a need for a range of this platform to address what I had said earlier, the demands coming from the students, demands coming from administration, the demands coming from the faculty, those that are charged with offering up solutions to address these needs. The better those are integrated, the easier our job is to manage that. And so while there is some trade-off, as you mentioned, about those issues, I think, you know, it's one of those things that there's pros and cons to having that integrated environment as well.
Yeah. Okay. The LSU system is not an integrated system, so my area of responsibility is just for the A&M campus. And even though, because we're sort of the 900-pound gorilla in that system, the decisions that we make often tend to be reflected out in the other campuses later on, and they sometimes rely upon us for experience and judgment calls. To be honest, I really didn't have to consider that. So we were really just taking into account our own campus. Maybe you have a
Well, we do not at American. We're Yeah. Centralized, but I recognize, having worked in a system before, the challenges of trying to get everyone to work together and to leverage the economies of scale that exist in a system when everyone's kind of moving together. And I think one of the hidden costs is when a system begins to fork and have different versions of open source or even multiple different learning environments, because it's hard to leverage that from an enterprise standpoint on the back end and even in the customer support area and get some of the economies of scale and deliver good service. But again, I think based on the kind of decentralized environment most of us work in, it's sometimes hard for us to kind of drive that. And so we end up trying to do our best to support the diversity that sometimes exists out there.
I'm sorry.
Could you, what was the last part of that? Moodle if you didn't have staff developers?
Yes, we could do that. So as mentioned previously, if it were a choice between doing in-house development and sacrificing human support in other ways, in this case, instructional technologists, I would definitely sacrifice. I'm sorry, guys. They're listening to me right now. But no, we're not going to sacrifice them. But if you were having on any altar, you could certainly make that transition. And what you would have is still a very robust product. You wouldn't have the in-house customizations that we're able to.
And a lot of people in the Sakai community choose to go to a vendor, a service partner, to do that kind of transition because it's a one-time thing.
Sure.
And it's not a skill set you're hopefully going to need over and over again, is transitioning from
Blackboard
to Sakai.
I think one of the dangers, though, of bringing in someone like that, though, is if there's not knowledge transfer, when they leave, they take all their knowledge.
And that's a standard IT project risk.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, the key I think you've done, which is try to retain some of that human capital, is very wise. Because if you just outsource all of it and you bring it in, then you've lost some of that knowledge. So I think, you're...
Barry, there's one here up front, too. Oh, okay.
How many students do each of you have, and how many staff members do each of you have to support your LMS systems?
Well, I represent the Sakai Foundation, so I don't represent an individual school. That ranges widely in the Sakai community. We actually maintain a database of... not every Sakai school's in there or they keep it up to date, but there are a number of them put in information about what hardware and software they're running, what staff they have to support Sakai in various different roles. And, it ranges from a half an FTE to a team of 15, depending on the context and the amount of instructional support they provide and things like that. So for Sakai, you can find out some of that data on our website, looking under the Sakai installations area.
Mm-hmm. And at LSU, we have 28,000 students. Thank you for asking this question, because this is the part where I really get happy. We have about 65% of our faculty actively using Moodle, which is up from what the usage was in our previous environment. We have 98% of all of our students actively using Moodle. And the biggest area where we don't actually have people using Moodle is in graduate courses. So if we eliminated counting all the dissertation credit hour courses, that number would go up much, much higher. So in terms of staff, we have three development staff, and we have a faculty technology center, some of whom, in the beginning, they were all very, very clearly focused on Moodle. But as I mentioned earlier, the good news is once you've made an investment in the human capital, then they can go on to do many other things, which they're very valuable in terms of assisting faculty in a wide variety of ways.
If you'll allow me to provide a metric here,
okay,
from our experience, everybody in the IS business talks about the big three: HR, student, finance, etc. I've got those three as well as LMS. I would say we now have the big four. Our LMS support responsibilities and resources are as big as almost anything else that we do. So I think that may translate into your institution as it's as big as the big ones.
We have about 12,000 students. We probably have no more than about 2.5 staff that support the back end as well as the front end. Very small containment. We have about 95% of our faculty that use Blackboard.
Okay. Hey, let's take a question from where you're from. Okay, so one of the things that you guys have been talking about are similarities. I think we're all running into some similar issues. But for me, because I just did a review of Blackboard, Moodle, and Sakai,
sure,
big difference is flow. Okay, so academic workflow, how does this whole thing work? I mean, I saw Moodle and I was thinking, wow, this is a big interactive syllabus with links off the menu. Blackboard has great campaign users, so I'm neutral right now. Blackboard had multiple what we call lesson tools where you can kind of say, well, here's module one, all of a sudden module one, here's module two, all of a sudden module two. So the things like alerts to faculty are really the big differences that I see between the products. And if you guys don't think that I'm kind of sincere with this, it's like the difference between using a Mac or Windows machine and Linux. They all have the same checkboxes. They all browse the web and email and play movies.
I mean, I can comment on that. You know, we decided not to address that because we can't do justice to it in this sort of forum. And a lot of those decisions, you know, are very personal ones.
Yeah.
So on the Sakai side, we, you know, have a bit of a, you know, our ambitions are teaching and learning, but also research collaboration and ePortfolio. And the choice has been made to build a system that's very flexible. And a lot of what you see when you go to Indiana University versus Marist versus some other Sakai school, is you see very different systems depending on how they've done the customization and installation process. So for Sakai, it's sort of almost hard to say, this is Sakai, because things look different in different places. If that's the way you want to draw that analogy, that's great.
Are there any more questions from outside?
If cost weren't a totally constraining factor, what are your institutional members' philosophies on providing options on campus for using either class of systems, open source or
Azure? So if you could afford to do both, would you? Is that am I? Is that the right interpretation of that question?
Or? How much is money a factor or not versus philosophy?
Ah, I see. Open source philosophy.
I think money always is a factor. But is it the driving factor? No, I think when your mission really is really about teaching and research, and you really have to turn to the people who are the experts, who are the ones that own that area, and help support them. If you know, on the back end, when we're doing the support, ideally we can try to get the economies to scale and get the most value for our investment. But if the campus decided they wanted to have both, then we would step up and do our best to support that if that's what they decided to do.
My remarks would be very similar to that. Cost is always going to be a factor, not necessarily the only factor or the primary factor. But I think the other part of the answer to that is that it really depends on your perspective. And the perspective of a faculty person is usability. Mm-hmm. It's a tool. And I would, with all due respect to the faculty on my campus, say that having a solution that is vended versus open source is not their primary concern. They
right.
just want it to work.
They want it to work. Yeah.
And our job as IT administrators is to try and bridge all of the perspectives, take into account all of the stakeholders,
sure.
and try to come up with a solution that
sure.
that meets the holistic need of the campus.
Sure.
So not an easy thing to do,
not,
necessarily.
You know, Blackboard has just introduced that integration with Moodle and Sakai on the data side, and I think that would make it a little bit easier for us to look at a more diverse environment from that standpoint, because I think students would prefer to have one environment to deal with. And so if they could select which one they wanted to deal with, then there would be options. And I think in a university, you always want to facilitate options and innovation, because that's what we're about.
I'm not sure about that they just want it to work thing. So I'll press on that a little
mm-hmm.
bit. I mean, I think we see it. Increase in open educational resources. We see increase in open scholarly access and publishing. I certainly see individual faculty members, not the vast majority, more and more interested in seeing their universities participate in open source communities. Now, is that going to be enough to drive change on campus? I don't think so at today. But it'd be interesting as these other open communities get increased traction on campus, if that will translate to an increased interest in open source.
I think we have time for one more question.
your model? Well, in terms of governance, I think the academic side, our instructional technology group reports to the provost, not to the CIO. And from my standpoint, they are my customer. I am there to support them. So we work with them to support them and figure out what their needs are and do our best to empower them to do their job. So they're the ones driving it. Just like on the administrative side, the controller would drive our financials or the HR would drive those. And so we see them as the customer. I think sometimes the student doesn't have a voice at the table. And so who is representing the student? And I think that's a big question. And I think that we're looking at trying to build a one-stop, trying to address the student demand, working through the student leaders. But there's really not necessarily one person that's supporting the student view in this whole discussion.
I would say the situation at LSU is that we have a long established history of very strong student governance and student participation. And so there's a really long history of cultivating and inviting that participation and conversation. So in the case of the LMS, we had a 5-year strategic plan. The consolidation, or at least the investigation of possible consolidation of our learning management system was one of the action items on our strategic plan. So we had sort of a reason to do that in the first place. And so we basically just engaged all of our governance process, which included faculty, staff, and students. And so we sort of rolled with that. I'm not saying it was easy, but the nice thing is we already had a framework to begin with, and that was a very inclusive framework, and that really helped us.
Good.
And I'm finding it incredibly hard to say anything concise about that subject, so I'm going to, and I think we're at time. I want to flash one more slide up here, and my apologies if I've missed some things here, but there's some opportunities for sessions from here forward. I didn't list anything in the past because I thought that would be useless, for places to find out more about any one of these products and communities here. So I'll just leave that up there.
Great.
I would respectfully ask you to fill out the feedback forms. They're very important to the program committee for maintaining quality of the program. I think, can I ask that you stay around?
We will.
We're going into a break, but those of you who would like to leave, feel free to leave, and our colleagues will stay around. And
good job.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul.
Really good job.